It should work.
All
right, guys, so welcome. I'm going to be looking between the computer over here and everyone over here. And this is like a new kind of dynamic, how to split my attention between the lovely faces on the computer and the real live human beings, the non-robots who are here with us in person. So, you know, this is experimental, but this is very exciting that we can begin to renew. You know, these questions we have of, you know, some people are one side of the screen, some people are the other, can we make a minion together? You know, it almost has that kind of feeling. So we have a hard copy packet with us here today. And what we're going to be looking at is a topic that's interested me for a while. It's a little bit of what I call rabbinic navel gazing, which means that, you know, it's like, yeah, you ever see like these conventions where, you know, especially in modern orthodoxy, you know, like there's a million journals and forums about talking about the future of modern orthodoxy. And, you know, the one thing that us modern orthodox people love the most is like talking about ourselves. So imagine for rabbis love doing that in general. Also, just imagine modern orthodox rabbis. That's what we love talking about all the time, is ourselves. So I finally succumbed to that Yetzirah. And I looked into a topic that interested me for quite a while, which is if you you look in the Gemara, you have we have our Thursday night Gemara class. So we have a machlokas Rava and Abaye. We have a dispute between Rava and Abaye. It doesn't say Rabbi Rava, it doesn't say Rabbi Abaye. It was very casual at times in the Gemara. Okay, you had Rav this and Rebbe that. But nowadays, you know, you open up a sefer, and you open up the beginning of a book, and just like for any random guy who had like a small little shtetl in Europe, it says Hagon, Hamaforsam, Ha Eloi, Ha this, Ha that, you know, and like the title just go on and on forever if you ever look at this. And so it kind of interested me about the whole question of, you know, all the honorifics that have been amassed over these past years. But then also, it was an interesting question. You know, when I was at Reed studying in Smicha, people would have these debates all the time, like, oh, that guy, you know, he passed the course, but he doesn't really deserve the title of rabbi. And so this relates a little bit to our conversation that we had a while back about female rabbis. But really, we should take a step back and ask the question about, before asking if women could be rabbis, really it behooved us to ask, what qualifies someone to be a rabbi in general? And what makes someone maybe qualify for more than just a basic rabbinic title, but maybe that they would be deserving of this Hagon, I'm a force of an Eloi stuff. And then also what I hope to explore in this class, probably going to be a two-part series, to be honest, is this problematic? You know, is this a positive development that we are coming up with all these titles nowadays? You know, when I go on Facebook, how many people have Facebook here? Just curious. Toby, you have Facebook. Mm-hmm. Jake? Gloria, yes, you have Facebook. Okay, so you go on Facebook and you see sometimes people, once they get their smich and they become a rabbi, on Facebook they write Rabbi Joe Greenblatt. You know, I don't know, is that a real rabbi? I just made it up. Sure. I hope it's not. So I'm sure there's a Joe Greenblatt out there somewhere. So, you know, Rabbi so-and-so, but you don't see it in any other profession, right? You don't see on Facebook for someone's regular profile, Dr. so-and-so, professor.
Oh, I'll bet you do. I'm not on Facebook, but I'll bet you see that.
It's very less frequent, but you'll see among some of my Orthodox colleagues, and I find a little bit more frequent with my non-Orthodox colleagues, that they like to put the rabbi title on. They could be on Clubhouse, on Facebook. You know, LinkedIn, I'd understand. LinkedIn is a professional network. But you see that a lot. So that's kind of what got my interest, which is this whole title business in general. Where does it come from? What are the parameters? Is it healthy, or is it something that we should be reimagining and reevaluating? So that's what leads us to our share tonight. It will likely be a two-part series because I know you don't have the hard copy in front of you, but we got quite a few pages to cover, 15 pages in total, and lots of fun material to go through. Okay,
so let's. You do see doctor a lot.
What was that?
You do see the honorific doctor.
Right. Oh, so Zay, what you reminded me of was a Wall Street Journal op-ed that came out a while ago, which that's what you're thinking about. What kind of partially stimulated this journey for me is that there was a famous or infamous Wall Street Journal op-ed around January time after the Bidens came into office. So it was, you know, something like Dr. Jill Biden dropped the title. because she had a doctorate in education as opposed to a doctorate in a hard science. So,
and she insists on using it.
Well, no, I will tell you that I believe it is still AP policy to only use doctors for medical personnel.
Right. So, you know what?
I don't think they've changed it. They may have, but I don't think so.
Right. So imagine, Susan, in our rabbinic world, imagine, if you're a pulpit rabbi, you go by rabbi. But if you're like a Kiruv campus rabbi, then you don't get the title. You know, imagine we start making distinctions like that. Which, by the way, we're going to see a source from Rav Elchanan Wasserman. If you,
campus rabbis don't use. I mean, they don't have their students call them rabbi.
Right.
They're not.
So, well, they're, and part of it, I think, also is A, it's an informal culture, but B, you know, people are doing campus work tend to be young guys right out of smicha. So they're probably, you know, trying to be the cool, relatable people, you know, like, yeah, call me Rabbi Joe. I think there actually is a JLC Rabbi Joe, so I should be careful. That's how they go. Now, let's see if I could, you know what? We'll get to the source when we get to the source. Oh, it's source number 15. What was that? Yeah, you know, you see it in Israel a lot, actually. You see that in Israel, like, if I were in Israel, they would say Rav Moshe. They wouldn't say Rabbi Kurtz or Rav Kurtz. They would say Rav Moshe. That's just like the norm. Even for big scholars who are, you know, well on in their years, that's just a cultural thing, which is interesting. But you see in the Gemara also, right? Rav Shmuel, you know, so, something like that. Rav Yossi. So you will see that. Okay, but if you look at verse number 15, that's actually a point that is made by Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Rav Elchanan Wasserman says, he's quoting Titin Emes Yaakov. So we're on page 7, source 15. We're just jumping ahead for a second. Alanir d'hayze rak, paragraph 1. B'sefer Or Elchanan mitodotso shalgon Rav Elchanan Wasserman zetzal, mesuper sh'amar mishmo shalachav etzchaim zetzal. Rav Elchanan Wasserman quotes the Chav Etzchaim, who says, She'ein lechanos toar harav afila ish tamal chacham imeno yoshev al kisei harabanus umeshamish behora o rosh hayeshiva. That if someone, basically, we shouldn't be doling out the title rabbi to anybody, unless, even if this person is a scholar, if he doesn't serve as a communal rabbi, if he's not a posek for the community, he doesn't decide halacha, or he's not a rosh yeshiva, a huge rabbinic figure by profession or by erudition, then over Amidvar Sheker Tirchak, one is violating the prohibition of lying by calling them a rabbi. So that's a very fascinating opinion, which gets to the point that we're saying about, you know, if I know some Torah, does that make me a rabbi? So in the yeshivish world, it's a little different than the modern Orthodox world, or basically anything to the left of the yeshivish world. So in a monorthodox world, and especially when you go to non-Orthodox denominations, the title rabbi is seen more as a degree. I learned for four-year program. Instead of a doctorate or a master's, I come out with smicha. I come out with ordination. But in the yeshivish world, not a lot of people who work as rabbis actually have smicha. They don't actually have ordination. So I was unfortunately a very disrespectful high school student. So I had a Bakias, my grandfather laughs because he knows all too well. So back in the day, I had a Bakias Shir Rebbe. So basically we had our main Rebbe earlier in the day. And then the Bakias Shir Rebbe, he would basically come in for like 45 minutes. And, you know, like what we do Gemara Thursday nights, he would go through the Gemara, share some supplementary ideas. And, you know, he's like a young kolel guy. So I asked him, when he got his smicha, where he got his smicha, and he said he doesn't have smicha. So then me being the terrible, disrespectful student I was, I'm like, oh, so you're not Rabbi so-and-so, you're Mr. So-and-so. And I regret it to this day. But essentially.
But they've called like some of the teachers at bicultural by Rabbi, even though they don't have smicha.
Oh, so right. So that's the thing. In the yeshivish world, bicultural, I guess I didn't know they were doing that also. But in the yeshivish world, so my mother works. Zadie, right? So your daughter, my mother, works in the Darche office.
And nobody calls her by,
anyone by virtue of being, just literally just being a man working in an administrative office is called Rabbi Plony, Rabbi so-and-so. because I guess if you're a man and you work in yeshiva environment, even if you're just you know, dealing with tuition and financials the entire day, all of a sudden you get upgraded to rabbi. So the term rabbi gets thrown around a lot in the more yeshivish world, because the thing also is there's a lot of people who, frankly, they know more that they might know more than your average modern Orthodox pulpit rabbi, but they just never got a formal smicha. But they've been sitting in Beis Medrash and Kollel for 10 years straight and learning nonstop. So they have the knowledge base, but they just never did a formal program. So it's a more interesting phenomenon, whereas in the YU world, right, I imagine when there was a search committee that was hiring me, they reached out to Y and they're like, okay, did he go through the smicha program? We want to see a guy went through a smicha program. So just different cultures. The idea of like smicha being this degree, professional degree, to a certain degree, is a new idea to a certain extent. Okay, but now that's our introduction. We're going to delve into the source sheet right now. So let's go into source number one. And source number one, really, we're just trying to get section one is where do we see the origin? You know, like let's say you're 10th grade Moshe Kurtz, and you want to be as disrespectful as possible and pushing, you know, trying to cause people anguish and parents and grandparents, right, Zadie? So the idea is, I would ask, give me a source. Where does it say that I have to call someone a rabbi if they're a rabbi? Well, we have the idea of respecting Talmidei Chachamim in the Gemara Kiddushin, source number one. Tanur Rabbanan, Mipnei Seva Takum. So it says that one should rise for someone who has Seva. That literally means someone who's elderly, but actually it refers to someone who is scholarly. Many times age does bring on erudition. So Yachol Afilu Mipnei Zakin Ashmai, Tamad Lomar Zakin. So I would think I would stand up for someone who is a wicked, wise person. Now, we're going to explore this later on when we talk about different denominations and I get myself into trouble. But Talmud Lomar Zakein. But the Gemara says, since it says in the word Zakein, it teaches me, Be'ein Zakein Ela Chacham. A Zakein teaches me also that a person has to have Chachma. But that being said, this Gemara in Kiddushin, which I think pretty much every, this is one of my jokes also. So in the yeshivish world, they learn the same stuff that the modern Orthodox high schools do, but they learn them as summer masechtos. So, so Kiddushin, this area over here in Kiddushin, where it talks about Kavod Yisavicha Vesimecha, respecting one's parents, respecting one's elders, respecting, Erwin, do you want to say something?
Yeah, if you take a look at the translation.
Yeah.
Nowhere near what you said.
Yeah.
Because, Hori is grayish white. That's, old and trite. I just look it up.
I don't know. It's an interesting. I think the translation is not the. That's why I have to look the original Hebrew. I don't know where to get the word Hori and come up with all these things from. But essentially, Seva refers to someone who is of advanced age. And here it means in the context, someone who has erudition as well. So, okay. But the Shulchan Aruch codified, it says, also the Talmud likros l'rabba b'shmo. Based on this, a person is not allowed to call their Rebbe by his name. Now, back in the day, we used to have what was called a Rebbe Mufak. A Rebbe Mufak was a person who you learned the majority of your Torah from. They were your Rebbe, not someone who you had as a Rebbe for 1 year in high school, but someone who's your Rebbe for life. That person's a Rebbe Mufak. So it's prohibited to call someone, call a Rebbe Mufak by his first name. Rather, you must give them a title. The Shulchan Aruch in source number three then says, Mitzvah ase lakum, that there's a mitzvah to stand up for such people. For anyone who's a scholar, even if they're not a Zakin, that's an important point. Because it says in the Pasuk, you would think if I read the Pasuk alone, that only if it's someone who's learned and elderly as well. But comes along the Shulchan Aruch and says, no, it refers to even someone who is young, but who is learned as well.
Yeah, I might throw in at this point that in the yeshiva's world, it is normal for even a married man to go to his Rebbe for advice on an important topic.
That's true. So what would be the import of that?
The importance of the relationship of a Jew with his Rebbe. That's emphasizing what you had said.
Oh, okay, I see. Right, the idea of the Rebbe Mufak. True, that's a good example. And Das Torah is a good topic for another class, because Das Torah is the idea, you know, is almost like this papal infallibility idea, that you go to a rabbi and you ask him, you know, should my son marry this person's daughter? Should I make this business investment? So it's, you know, it's almost a funny thing. You know, I would say to a certain degree, the yeshivish rabbinate and the marotek's rabbinate should swap balbatin. I'm not talking about you guys, of course, when I say this, because you're all invested. They should swap balbatin to a certain degree, because in yeshivish world, you have rabbis who generally don't have a college education. They know Torah well, but they don't know much beyond the world of the base medrash. But meanwhile, you have people coming to consult them on matters that have nothing to do with what's in the Gemara, nothing to do with what you'll find inside the base medrash. You know, should I invest in this? Should I invest in Bitcoin? You know, what's the rabbi know about cryptocurrency? But meanwhile, you know, in the modern Orthodox world, you know, we get lucky if the majority of our congregants are consulting us on halakhic matters alone. So, you know, really we should swap, because at least the modern Orthodox rabbi, we have college degrees, master's degrees. So if anything, you know, if they're going to ask a question that's on Torah related, they may as well go to someone who has a secular education also. But that's just my quip.
In the prior generation, some of the early adults did have college.
That is true.
Listening to the
Rav Chirevi. Right. Yeah, the Rav and the Bob Chirevi were in University of Berlin together. But it's not as all, you know, that was more of a Western European phenomenon, where the, you know, I think Srinivas also had, they had doctorates. But most of, you know, Eastern European Jewry, I guess maybe because the culture barred them, perhaps you can argue, they didn't have that kind of level of education. But we're talking about nowadays also. That's a phenomenon. Okay. Now the thing is, nowhere in here does it say that you must call a standard. You know, you go to a shul down the street, where does it say that you have to call that person by the title of rabbi? It just says you're Rebbe Mufak. You know, it says that you have to stand up for any rabbi, which actually, that's something I was raised when I was a little kid, that when a Rebbe from the school walks in the room, everyone stands up immediately. And I remember when I was in a classroom and not everyone stood up for a particular Rebbe. Like, he just walked in, no one noticed, they didn't stand up. He got so upset and he said, you know, how dare you? You know, you should be standing up. And then this is the kicker. He said, I'm not asking you to stand up for my kavod. I'm asking you to do it, you know, so you can learn how to have respect, which I didn't buy it, by the way. I mean, it depends who's saying it, you know, like if it's a person.
And now would you?
I mean, you know, like there are certain people I know who you know, aren't rodef achar kavod, who aren't running after accolades all the time. And if someone like that said it, I would believe it. But, you know, there's like sometimes there are like people who are, you know, trying to always get the next accolade. So if someone like that says it, it's hard for me to believe that's coming from a genuine place. Like, it's not for me that you're giving me the kavod. I just genuinely want you to understand the halacha. It's like, Maybe I should work and be Malami Tzchus more. I should get benefit of the doubt. I don't know. It's probably Chesaron in me. Yeah, see, I want to. Oh, God willing, 1 month from now. All right. So, because this seems only limited to a Rebbe Mufak, we have to go to source number 4. This wonderful sefer that I found on Otsar HaChachma, which is the biggest online database for finding Sfarim. And I just figure, I'm like, let me like type in the word Kavod Harav and see what Sfarim come up. And there's a lot of Sfarim literally just written on the topic of giving Kavod to a rabbi and giving honor to a rabbi. So, it's called Otsar HaChachma. So I only have access to it through YU. But we'll see. Hopefully they don't revoke my access to it at some point, because it's helped me make a lot of shiurim. So in Sefer Kavod Vehidur by Rav Yitzchak Eliyahu Adler, I'm not exactly sure who that is, but he apparently is very learned. So he writes that nowadays, let's see if we can find his source number 4. Mashmos HaPoskim She'Isser Likros Rabo Bishmo, the prohibition of calling a rabbi by their first name. Nemar Barava Mufak Davka. It sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch we saw that only refers to someone's Rebbe Mufak. What's the issue? I don't know if it's an issue. Maybe we're happy. Most of us don't have Rebbe Mufaks anymore. Most of us have, you know, a pulpit rabbi at your shul. But as much as I love the fact that we get to learn together more than once on a weekly basis, many of us, chances are you're not learning the majority of your Torah from me or Rabbi Cohen. I'd imagine maybe yes. In your whole life, I mean, maybe if that is the case, then it would be a rare instance, but that's not usually how it works. Okay, but we call Malcolm second to last line. So he says maybe nowadays calling someone by the title of rabbi is really no different than, you know, ironically, than standing up. Standing up was a rising for Talmud Chacham when they entered the room. That was something that was expected for anybody, no matter who they were. You know, they got their smicha, they're established as a relatively learned person. You stand up for them when they come in the room. So nowadays, for whatever reason, we're not as machbit about that in some circles. But what's become the standard nowadays, though, is to call every person who is a rabbi, Rabbi so-and-so. So this Sefer Kav of a Hiddur makes the assertion that that applies to anyone nowadays. The issue that we have to explore, which brings us to section number two, is, okay, great. I know that if somebody is a scholar, they're a learned person, they know a lot of Torah, they teach Torah, then I call them by the title of rabbi. The question is, what is the threshold for someone be considered erudite enough, being learned enough, that they deserve to get the title of rabbi? Does it have to do with institutional connection, or could it be, again, you know, it could be someone who's in the community, who's a very learned person. I mean, you know, many times I try to, you know, let's say call Rabbi Jeff Kahn, Rabbi Kahn, because he's a very learned person. He doesn't work as a rabbi, but he's here in our community. He teaches at Daf Yomi Shir. So, you know, it might be something for us to consider that people in our community who might not work as rabbis, but are learned people who are teaching Torah, that might be something to consider. So let's take a look at our sources here. And there is a huge divergence among the commentaries as to how tolerant they are of calling other people who they consider their inferiors rabbis. Because you can imagine, right? If I think of myself as this much of a Talmud Chacham, I'm going to think very lowly about the guy who only knows this much, right? So I'm naturally going to probably draw the line around somewhere where I feel comfortable. Doesn't that make sense? So let's take a look. Look in the Shach in source number 5 on page number 2. The Shach says that what's the qualification for being called the Rav? He quotes based on Tosvos in Kiddushin. You need to be someone who is exceptionally learned, exceptionally wise. Look in the next bolded line at the end. What's that mean to be? Well, what's that mean to be exceptionally wise? I'll translate literally. You'll tell me what you think that means. That he is more wise, more learned than the rest of the masses. Now, that still doesn't give us an exact criterion. That doesn't give us a precise measurement on the barometer, but it clearly is saying that not just, you know, I remember one time I was talking to a guy. He taught at this, he was asked to teach a Gemara class at a program called Drisha. So Drisha is, taking that, sir, Toby? Susan, you said something?
I think we're familiar with it.
Familiar with it. Marissa did a winter program with them twice. So he was asked to teach beginners, you know, he taught a beginner's Gemara to some people who were there. And he remarked to me in passing, he said something to the extent of, you know, he had his art scroll Gemara with him. And he said, yeah, you know, I just have to be like a page ahead of, I don't know that much. I just have to be a page ahead of the guys who were in the class with me. And then all of a sudden I'm the Rebbe. So I'm sure, you know, that's not the average teacher they have at their program, but that was that one particular person who was teaching there. He admitted he didn't know that much, but he knew how to read an art scroll and to then give over what he read in the art scroll. And he could look up the art scroll, you know, a day before he had to teach that piece in the art scroll. So then that was the person who was more learned. I don't think the Shach is referring to a scenario like that. It's unclear to me. This is many years ago, and I wasn't actually at that class. I was talking to him at another context before that class. So what I think the Shach is referring to isn't someone who, you know, knows just enough that he's then able to teach a shir to other people, but it means clearly someone who, you know, you might not, I might not know that much Torah, but it's very clear to me that this person is a learned person. Now, that's the funny thing. Determining who is learned, by the way, requires a certain level of knowledge yourself.
Exactly.
Because if I have no way to determine who is considered I have no way to determine who should be like the medical professionals calling shots for our country, for our communities, because I just don't have the base requisite amount of knowledge of medicine to even make a call and determine, who's who in the field. The same thing in regular law. So, many times, and we're going to talk about this later on, Rav Henkin, part of what got me into this was there's a chu from Rav Henkin where he says that there are people who they know enough Torah to teach it over nicely, and then people think of them as the next Gadol Hador. But meanwhile, because their audience might not know so much Torah, and this person just happens to be very charismatic and happens to be able to give over things in a very eloquent manner, the people who just don't have a base level knowledge of Torah don't know how to distinguish that guy who's a good orator from someone like Rav Mordechai Willig or Eliashiv. So that actually is a challenge sometimes in the modern Orthodox community too. Sometimes people, obviously I know Toby, we have our pizza, our chef there, we won't get into that. But be it as it may, I have to have some requisite amount of learning to determine, just to have an idea of who's considered a Gadol and who's not. So that's another important point.
I might want to insert at this point that somebody can have all kinds of smichas and all kinds of knowledge of Torah law, but if he lacks judgment, if he's got personality flaws, he doesn't have wisdom.
Very good. So Zadie, I think what you refer to, we're going to look at, God willing, later on. So remember, we talked about source one. There's a Zaki and Ashmai, which there's different ways to translate it, but the base translation, I think, is a wicked elder. I wonder how they translate it here. Do they translate it here? Okay, but I'm translating it as someone who's like a sinner. An age. Okay, so if you have, like you said, so point out, if you have someone who they're very learned, but they clearly are not keeping mitzvah adam lechavero, then their learning isn't going to do much for them in terms of making them into a good religious figure. That's an excellent point, Zadie. Okay, but the Shach is generally quoted as having the more constrictive understanding. He says it has to be very clear to everyone that this person just like leagues beyond the rest of the crowd, leagues beyond the other kolo people, the other rabbis, and that's like what makes someone a real rabbi. That's how most people understand the Shach. However, if you look in L'Reicha Kamocha, he quotes a few things for us. He quotes Pele Yoetz and he quotes Rav Eliashiv at the end, source number 6 on the bottom. Like, Rav Eliashiv, what's the criterion for someone deserving the title rabbi? You see only at the end in the quotes, what's it say? Yodia Lilmod. He knows how to learn. He knows how to learn. What does that mean? He knows how to learn. Again, it's a little bit vague. What's it mean? I think you see the difference is if I say, that person knows how to learn, and Rav Eliashiv, really, Ajib says about you, that person knows how to learn. It has a much different connotation. There's he knows how to learn. Okay, he knows how to open up a Mishnah Berurah and read a basic Mishnah Berurah. Versus, when like a Talmud Chacham like Rav Eliashiv, Gadol Dor says that person knows how to learn, that means he's really giving a huge hashgacha on this person. So again, a little bit of ambiguity. But the Chafetz Chaim says that there will be many times people in communities who will justify critiquing a community rabbi on the basis of thinking that they don't deserve the title. So look in source number 7, the Chafetz Chaim, and I'll translate, but you have the translation with you as well. The Chafetz Chaim, of course, being Hilchos Lashon Hara, he's worried about people slandering others. And in this little section here, he talks about slander that rabbis get as well. So he says at the beginning, Vada. The Izer Sipra Lashon Harwa Fila Ama Aretz, even if someone is ignorant of halacha, Kigam Hu Bechlau Am Hashem Vitzivosab, because anyone who is a member of the nation of God, it is improper for you to speak Lashon Hara about them. So skipping a little bit, we'll just translate. Shotzim Mitzrayim Al Kol Shekin Ehu Taman Chacham, and certainly if this person is someone who's learned in Torah. The Vanayam is Saber Lashon Hara, Lavavono Gadol Harbe Yoser. certainly the sin of Lashon Hara becomes much more compounded at that point. V'amrei Chazal, Kol Masabra Achim Itazel Shel Talmid Chacham, Novo Bagehenem. You start talking about the private matters of a Talmud Chacham, you will fall into the depths of hell. Shnemar, the Kampam Nichnas Ayatei Sebechal Mavazat Talmid Chacham, Yidu Agulo Anshul Shem Mavazat Talmid Chacham, and he quotes in Yordea that how great the Isser is of criticizing, not criticizing, but slandering a Talmud Chacham. Now skipping past the parentheses, Achayetzo Hara Mesis La'adam, but the evil inclination will sometimes get a person. Delos Shaiklal Din Mavazat Talmud Chacham, Rak Bismana Gemara, what's he going to get you to say? That so back in the day, you know, I might say to myself that look, the rabbis in the times of the Gemara, that was the real McCoy, right? You got Rava, you have Bayer, Achista, right? You have all the great Gedolei Hador in the times of the Talmud. Nowadays, look, you're stuck with people like Moshe Kurtz. So what you might say to yourself is, you know, back then, Shaykh Chacham and Yoser, they were great Talmud Chachamim. But look at the people we're stuck with nowadays in this generation. But thankfully for people in my line of work, he says this is a great mistake. Because someone who's considered learned is based on the generation. Even nowadays in our times, that is interesting. If he is able, he should, if he ought to be giving piske halacha, ought to be deciding halacha, v'yageya batorah. What's the yageya batorah? We're going to see where Sternbach's going to talk about. It's our good old friend, Sternbach. Yageya batorah means that you are, they say back in Darche, I have to get a good translation for it. You have to, you know, harving in teda is what they would say. You have to be toiling in Torah. Toiling is probably the best translation for that. Then nikra talmud chacham. Then you're called a talmud chacham. And if you degrade someone like that, you malign them, even with, you know, simple slander, lashon hara, even not in their face. It's a great, terrible sin. The chayiv nidos, and you can even be liable to excommunication on that basis. Wow, that is a rough one over there. Makes me wonder if the Chavetz Chaim was dealing with a lot of politics in his community at the time. Right? But that's like a huge statement over there. Now, I will comment very quickly. For those of you who, you know, maybe over the years, if we have, I'm still not justifying. Again, even if someone's not a Talmud Chacham, by the way, this Isser Lashon Hara applies. So I want to clarify. The Chavetz Chaim is just saying, on top of that, if he's a Talmud Chacham, then there's an extra level of sin that's being done here. But certainly, we're not supposed to be slandering even, you know, someone who's not a Talmud Chacham. But what he, so interesting, what we're going to get to in a moment, soon, is what's that mean, Roy Lahoros Yegeba Torah? Again, what I do for the most part is not, I wouldn't call Psak Halacha. What I do for the most part is what's called Bimar Mako. For instance, you ask, oh, I forgot Yal V'Yavo on Rosh Chodesh night. What do I do? So when I tell you, you don't have to repeat Yal V'Yavo when you forgot in Meir Rosh Chodesh night coming up next week. So I didn't paskin for you that you don't have to repeat Shmona Esrei. What I did was I may have not pulled the Shulchan Aruch off the shelf and literally showed you the Sifin Shulchan Aruch, but essentially what I was doing is I'm referencing something that's already on the books. Psak Halacha is, let's say electricity was just invented now, and then Moshe Kurtz comes along and decides, I'm a Bar Hachi. I can make a decision. I could argue whether electricity's fire, whether it's building on Shabbos. That is above my pay grade. In fact, actually, in Smicha, in Reitz, that's actually what they emphasize a lot in professional classes. They say, for the most part, we're not giving you Smicha to innovate new halachos. We're giving you Smicha to educate you so that you could point to halachos on the books and make decisions by extrapolating that. So that's, you know, and that relates back to our discussion about Yoetzot Halacha. And that's what a Yoetzot Halacha does also for the most part. A Yoetzot Halacha, she's not making new halachos. She's essentially also pointing to her knowledge of Shulchan Aruch of Poskim and saying, by the way, I remember in Nishman I learned that this was the halacha back in Yeshiva. So the thing is that many rabbis also are doing the same thing. For the most part, what we are doing is not innovating halakha, but we're just pointing out to people what the halakhos are in the Shulchan Aruch, because hopefully we've read through some Shulchan Aruch at some point in our life. Okay, so that's an important point that we'll get to soon. But if you look in source number 8, in Dirshu, it quotes, so the Dirshu came out with their own special Mishnah Berurah. The Dirshu Mishnah Berurahs are amazing resource, because the issue with the Mishnah Berurah, look, the Mishnah Berurah is, doesn't need my Haskamah. The Mishnah Berurah is fantastic. It's wonderful. Groundbreaking commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. But it was written by the Chafetz Chaim. We need, and there's been many Shuvos that have addressed new phenomenon that came after the Chafetz Chaim. So even if you're someone who's of the opinion that the Mishnah Berurah is the final word on halacha, there's still many things that have come up after the Mishnah Berurah himself. So what they did is footnotes on the Mishnah Berurah, and they'll say, Rav Wasser says this, and Rav Moshe Feinstein says that, Rav Eliashiv says that. So in the Dirshu footnotes, they quote Rav Chaim Kanievsky, so again, who's a Talmud Chacham? Is someone who's Muchsak Talmud Chacham. What's Muchsak? They're established. They're understood to be a Talmud Chacham. The issue is, it's if someone's established as a Talmud Chacham, well, it's kind of circular because, well, why did we establish him to begin with? And we're actually going to talk about instances where people have fooled their communities into thinking that they're a Talmud Chacham. For instance, there's a good story. My father always likes to tell me this one. Zadie, you've probably heard this at the table in the past. My father always likes to tell this apocryphal story about a yeshiva boy that he, probably like myself, made a lot of mischief back in school. And so finally, after all the meeting with the parents and deliberating back and forth, they finally decided we have to expel the student from the school. And so it was a very from school. So they wrote the letter of expulsion. They wrote it in Hebrew, you know, like they do for their documents. So this guy, he then he leaves New York. He takes a flight out into the middle of Yehupitzville, in the middle of America. There's a little bit of a community over there that needed a rabbi. So they say, okay, we need to do our due diligence. You know, they couldn't, I don't know, they needed to have phones back then, I'm not sure. So they just said, can we see your certificate of smicha? So he takes out his letter of expulsion that's written in Hebrew, and he shows it to the people in the community, and he says, oh, here's my document in smicha. They, not knowing any better, like, okay, some nice Hebrew words on here, good handwriting. Okay, it looks like an official Hebrew document. It's signatures on there, of the rabbanim on there. Wow. So they hire him as the rabbi. So, okay, most people don't get their way in that way, but it is an interesting question about how people make it into it. And this leads us to the section that we will conclude with tonight. We're going to spend the last 10 minutes on a section talking about the pitfalls and challenges of determining who makes the cut. Because, okay, we have a, you know, again, it's still a little bit vague. I understand that. But we have like a general idea based on the sources we saw, who is deserving of a title, who's deserving of the honor, the respect, and all that fun stuff that comes along with being considered a Talmud Chacham. But remember how we talked about at the beginning that nowadays people want all these titles, Hagon, Harav, Eloi, Hamafursam. I can't even think of these things. These aren't things that like roll off my tongue, you know? But again, next time I'll come in with a sefer. You open up certain books, you know, you see like all these abbreviations. And you see all these abbreviations, and it's just like a title upon a title upon a title. And the issue is that back in the day, and arguably today, certain people, if they don't get the full list of honorifics and accolades, they're going to say, what kind of disrespect is this, an affront to my honor? And Rav Akiva Eiger, actually, so we're on page number 4 over here. Rav Akiva Eiger, at the beginning of his tshuva, so there was a, at the beginning of his responsa, which I think his children compiled and had published, the children have a letter where they're talking about the kind of the final wishes Rav Akiva Eiger had when things were being published and how to refer to a rabbi in the sefer. And so Rav Akiva Eiger says that I either call someone, it's actually at the end of the second column. He says, I either call somebody by Harav or by Hagon. I don't start this whole business of Harav, Hagon, Hagon, Harav. I go to someone who's great. I don't start adding on. I only go with one title. I don't overdo it. Why? He mentions that there are three possible pitfalls that can happen. And by the way, Heidegger only mentions three pitfalls. We're going to see this more than three pitfalls with this whole new industry of the proliferation of titles and all these honorifics that are being given out to rabbis. So he writes as follows. He writes, so we're looking in the first column, second paragraph. He says that, first of all, Shemis Avak Shecha, the second matter that I request of you, my children, so he says, don't print the beginning. You know, we've actually seen this because this Monday night class, sometimes instead of a source sheet, we'll actually look at a primary text alone and we'll go through a tshuva. So sometimes when we learn Rav Asher Weiss, sometimes the shaila, the question, is included in the sefer. But many times you look at Igros Moshe, you look at Rav Moshe Feinstein, and most tshuvos, they don't have the original question. They don't have the original text of the person asking the question. Now, why is that we don't have the original context? Many times the tshuva will say, I was asked about a particular matter. So many times because there are private details in there. But Rav Akiva Eiger says, because people were calling me by all these like titles, and they're really like piling it on and really trying to flatter me. So he says, Yashir Chayli Avatlinam, if I had the power, I would do away with this whole industry of titles that people are giving out. Now, does anyone remember Pop Quiz when we saw a phrase like this previously in our shir? When's the last time we saw some rabbi say, there's this terrible thing happening, and if there's only I had the power, I would make this change? Does anyone remember? It's a long time ago. I don't expect anyone to, but just in case. When we were learning about Tirchut and Tzibura, that may have been a Wednesday night topic. Maybe that's why we don't remember. It was a Wednesday night topic when I was covering a Wednesday night shir, which Baruch Hashem, by the way, we now have the 10:30 shir. Well, now it's 10:15 Shabbos mornings after 8 o'clock minyan after the Kiddush. So no longer Wednesday night class. Now it's the Shabbos morning class once again, back in its proper place. So when I was covering back in the day, we went through a few classes about Tirchut and Tzibura. And we read a tshuva from Rav Yaakov Emden, where Rav Yaakov Emden was talking about all the Misha Beirachs that were added on Shabbos. So, you know, nowadays we don't even do a Misha Beirach. By the way, I might be getting myself in trouble over here. A lot of people, when we shortened davening, we abridged davening during the beginning of the pandemic after we came back to shul. So, for instance, we did start with brachos in the morning.
Right.
Now, people came over to me, one or two people said, when are we getting brachos? I think, Erwin, you may have been one of them. When are we getting brachos? Right? Was that, yeah, you're one of them. We were saying, you know, when are we going to get brachos started again? One thing, and there are a lot of things that, like, I just got comfortable with, and Baruch Hashem, we have congregants who are, on their game more so than I am, and they remind me about things that we're supposed to have. There's one thing that no one's reminded me about yet, which is the Misha Beirach after somebody gets an aliyah. No one's complained about that. And certainly no one's complained about the Misha Berach on top of the Misha Berach.
Time consuming?
Because you make a donation. Huh? Right. But for a second one. But usually there's two Misha Berachs, right? There's a standard Misha Berach, a generic one that everyone gets. And then there's a second one. You say, can you make a Misha Berach? And then you say, for my father, for my aunt, for my dog, for my rabbi's dog, you know. Yeah.
That's right, because in the that was every Shabbos. Every person who got called up
came
up with their list and whatever, but they had shorter.
If there wasn't money coming in, you weren't going to request. Oh, wow. So, okay. So no one's requested to bring that Misha Berach back in. Wants to make a donation. Okay. So I guess I didn't realize that was it. Now I understand why. So, okay. That's, I guess people just like really didn't care for the Misha Berach. Rav Yaakov Emden, though, he wasn't opposed to, now Rav Yaakov Emden, he was the rabbi. Now, if anything, you know, part of the rabbi's portfolio sometimes is the fundraising. So you would imagine Rav Yaakov Emden would want to bring back the Misha Berachs, so that way it would help bring some cash flow into the shul. But Rav Yaakov Emden, though, he was willing to forego even, I don't know if they did the donations to Misha Berachs back then. Maybe that's a newer invention. But you're asking Erwin if back in Europe. Oh,
yeah, not with money.
Oh, okay, so, okay. Oh, that's what they did. Okay. But Rav Yaakov Endin said, he said, you know, ideologically, he was opposed to having Mishaberos on Shabbos for a number of reasons. One, just simply, we're not supposed to make bakashos on Shabbos. We're not supposed to make requests on Shabbos from God. That's why most of Shemona Esrei, which is making requests from God, we don't have that on Shabbos. It's one of the reasons. But also because since Mishaberos take up extra time during davening, and they're not obligatory, it's just going to schlep davening past the two-hour, I don't even say two-hour mark, I'm saying two-hour mark because my shita has always been that davening should on Shabbos morning should never exceed 2 hours. So far, I've been successful in that. Let's see if we can keep that going. But anyway, why did I bring it up? Because at the end of his shuva, he said, I wish I could make these changes in my shul, but apparently there are people who are not letting me do that. So he said, Iyashir chayli avatlinam, you know, something like that. If I had the power, I would annihilate all the Misha Barakhs and get rid of all them from Dominic. That's what he said. I don't know if you caught on to this, or Yaakov was a bit of a firebrand. My Rebbe, Rabbi J.J. Schachter, Shlita, he actually wrote his dissertation on Rav Yaakov Endin. Rav Yaakov Endin actually also. Oh, it's Rav Yonos and Eibshitz. Right, because Rav Yaakov Endin is most famous for the controversy. You know, usually that's the thing. We remember everyone for their controversies. You know, it's like Rabbi Avi Weiss, we're just going to remember because female rabbis, but no one's going to remember all the Russian activism, that kind of stuff either. So. Oh, that was controversial. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, fine. Okay, I guess he did. Okay, bad example. Never mind. Moving on. Oh, yeah. Okay, good point. No, bad example. But Rabbi Jishar actually wrote his doctoral dissertation on Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So, but he had this, Rabbi Yaakov Emden is famous for his machlokis with Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. For Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, he would write a kamea, which is an amulet. And it was a form of Kabbalah to try to heal people by writing special incantations or a name of God in an amulet in order to heal people supernaturally. The issue is, this is coming off the heels relatively of the Shabtai Tzvi issue of a false messiah. So what happened was, this moment there that he was starting to use amulets and use Kabbalah, well, Kabbalah was what led everyone to his false messianism. So it created a whole controversy, and Rav Yaakov Emden, as you well point out, he was known as a bit of a firebrand because that was his cause celebre that he took up. So that was a very important point by Rav Yaakov Emden. But we see over here that the same language that Rav Yaakov Emden used was used over here in Rav Akiva Eger. Again, Yashir Chayli Avatzlinam, it's a very popular phrase. If I had the power, I would get rid of it. Now, before we run out of time, because Mincha's at 8:10, what are, you know, let me ask you very quickly. What are the potential issues of the proliferation of honorifics? What do you think halakhically? Like, give me a halakhic terminology. What are the possible issues from a halakhic standpoint of giving, of doling out superfluous honorifics to individuals?
Kind of waters down authority.
Okay, so Susie, you're saying is that if everyone, you know, it's like I'm the only person in this generation here. So okay, there is a movie called The Incredibles that came out. And in the Incredibles, the Syndro, who is the antagonist, basically it's all about superheroes, and then the superhero, and then so this guy who's the antagonist, he basically tries to make everybody have some sort of like powers or whatnot, and he says, I'm botching the line, but he says, when everybody's super, nobody's super. So that was his the tagline that he had. And that's the idea here, that if everyone gets to be called Hagon, Harav, and Meforsim, and Eloi, this and that, it's Husa Yagin Alinu, Lolan Vaed, so then nobody is super anymore. And if everyone gets called by these super honorific and long titles, then it begins to mean nothing. So that's an important point, Susan. So we're going to quickly go through the three issues. Issue number one, he says, is that there's Avak Chanufa, that there is a form of flattery that's being done here. You see, because when people are writing these letters to Rav Akiva Eger, what happened is that they were trying to flatter Rav Akiva Eger, and they're trying to get a, you know, sock that was in their favor. So they would add on all these honorifics and titles and try to lay it on thick in order to win over Rav Akiva Eger's favor. Maybe it was, who knows, maybe they were in a din Torah. They got into a disputation with somebody. So they would say, you know, you say it actually in court, right? You say, Your Honor, right? But imagine, it's like every time you spoke to the judge, you said, Your Honor, if it would please, you know, imagine like you talk, you start talking in third person. You do that to, oh, so actually, so there's a case in Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah where was it Rechanav and Tradion? I'm forgetting which one it was, but basically he said that he said, you know, kind of like Your Honor, but he was referring to Hashem. He wasn't referring to the judge, but because the judge interpreted that he was referring to him, he ruled in his favor. He's like, no, I was referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I guess he was satisfied with that. So issue number one is flattery. You're trying to flatter the person by giving them all these additional titles. That's the issue lehakose for the writer. Ulamisha kosven, and then for the people who are being written to, there are two potential issues that could come out halachically. Number one, avak geos, arrogance. If you are the recipient of all these different titles and all these different things that people are doling out to you, it could lead to gava, which is problematic. And then Rebbe Akiva Eger says, and then oavak sinas chinam im yamatu. This is the important one I want to get to. It could lead to sinas chinam, right? Remember every Tisha B'Av, somehow everyone comes out thinking that the only isser that everyone committed for the base of Eshav Yisroel was sinas chinam. We talked about the Ron, right? We mentioned this a few times. Ron talking about Birchas Torah, and people were machshav Torah enough, people didn't consider learning Torah to be, the study of Torah to be more important than other studies. There's other issues. But right, we all remember from Tisha B'Av, sinas chinam, baseless hatred is a bad thing. Well, imagine if you don't dole out enough titles, right? Imagine, I just get so comfy with all the respect and honor and accolades that someone's giving me, if I don't get that from the next guy, if he just says, Rabbi so-and-so, then I'm going, well, I'm Ta'agon HaRav. Well, what happened to Ha'iloi? What happened to all these titles? So by raising the bar so much, you know, it's kind of like mutually assured destruction at a certain point. What are you going to say, Erwin?
No, you're literally leave something out.
Right. So exactly. And so it's an unfortunate reality. Right? Kiva Eger is realizing that, you know, by you would hope that people in this kind of position who rank Sakalacha, that they wouldn't have these issues. But by virtue of anyone being in a position of power, you know, people my line of work, we naturally are very much predisposed to issues of gaivan and issues of thinking that everything's an affront to our honor. So Reki Dager said, because of that, I don't even want that to be published in a sefer. I don't want any titles that people refer to me to be published in a sefer. I don't want any of these issues. I don't want to have a risk of being a bal gaiva. I don't want to have issues of sinas chinam. And because of that, those are three issues that Reki Dager lists off the bat with the proliferation of titles. God willing, we'll pick it up with the Stechem, and next time we'll conclude over here. It's Yashar Koach to our people who are with us in person on Zoom, and Bez Hashem will be part two next week. Have to run to Mincha. All right.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. Thank you. Thank you.